We're very lucky to have our guests today. They don't need any great introduction, except to say Susan is obviously had a long-standing commitment to the not-for-profit sector in a variety of ways through the Catholic education, in a way through the Bushfire Commission, you know, given the role of the CFA and a whole range of volunteer and community organisations that were both impacted by that but involved in that situation, like neighbourhood houses and some of the organisations we deal with, and did do the inquiry at the State Services Authority into regulation of the not-for-profit sector, and is now and has been involved in UNESCO and a range of other community organisations, or international but also more locally based community organisations. So thank you for coming today in a very punishing and busy schedule I know that you keep. David's an old friend of Pilch Connect. I'm calling him that whether he likes it or not, because he's come back to us. He has been a visitor before. Some of you will have met him when he came out with Pilch last time, and he is the Executive Director of Charity Services with the UK, with the Charity Commission of England and Wales, and here, very luckily, we think, on a secondment from government to government to help Susan with the task force. So welcome again, David. I'm trying to be like Tony Jones because he's my hero on Q&A. I picked up my Basketball Manager's clipboard folder because I thought, well, that's, I suppose, a slightly not-for-profit tone. So I can tell you which number every child's supposed to be on the score sheet if you'd like to know. My daughter's number 4. I don't have the high tech, but I do have some questions that I thought I'd put, and that will draw out some information, and then obviously we can, you know, have a fairly robust and casual conversation after that. I wanted to ask, my first question for Susan was, I wanted to ask her what her first thought was when she got whatever the phone call that you get for these things was. How did you feel when that sort of came your way?
Well, I suppose context is important, and I had gone to Toronto for a meeting of the Loreto Order. If some of you know the structure of the Catholic Church, various religious orders have a range of largely education and health services, and I had agreed to chair a board for a couple of them, a national board, because they're moving, as their numbers die out, they're moving to independent governance structures. So this was the first time in the 400-year history of the order that they had had outsiders at their 5-yearly international meetings. And I was very much in that mode. It was slightly contemplative. It was late spring in Toronto, that lent itself to that sense of working in a pretty collegial and harmonious way with the this religious but community-based organisation. So then the phone call came, in fact, initially from my husband, who was very excited and thought it was a great idea. I was less excited, and when I was directly approached, I just said I hadn't thought of myself in the role because I imagined that they would want a tax lawyer or, you know, a charity lawyer or whatever. But it was interesting that the response was particularly for the interim commissioner, they wanted someone who could work across government and with the sector. And I thought, well, I think I can do that. And I do appreciate, now that I've been in the role for a few months, there was some wisdom in that it's not easy working across the Commonwealth, and even add to that working across the states and territories, because there are well-protected patches, and when you're creating a new entity, it's often taking little bits and pieces of those with well-publicised government decisions, but even still that does make it pretty challenging. But 3 months on, I'm extremely excited about it, pretty energised. We're meeting new people on a daily basis, and I think we have the extraordinary benefit of this being a change that is really welcomed by the sector and for which there's enormous support in the sector, and we want to capitalise on that while it's there.
So David, how does it feel to be back, and what are you actually doing while you're here?
Well, it's fantastic being back, and I'm working as advisor to the task force, working with Susan and the team, really, on a range of issues, partially how we design the organisation, how we build the IT infrastructure to deliver some of the key priorities of the new regulator, such as the report wants use often functionality. Also, we're undertaking quite a wide-ranging consultation. So we've had four roundtable events over the last 2 weeks, which have been fantastic in terms of getting a really sort of broad range of views in that will help us shape the consultation document that we're aiming to get out on the 30th of November. And then we're going to be doing a broader consultation with the sector across all the states and territories, as well as using an online forum. So it's a really interesting time to be here. And it's a great opportunity, really. It's very rare you get the opportunity to help shape a new organisation, and not just in terms of structure, but very much in terms of the regulatory approach, the culture, and really what the organisation's trying to achieve. So it's brilliant being here, and hopefully I'm able to contribute to the process.
Oh, it's always nice on a sunny day. You can always say that. So maybe if we could get a bit of a thumbnail sketch of what the role of the task force is and how you're tracking after this first 3 months.
Okay, so we have primarily the role is to be able to open the doors on the 1st of July 2012.
That's a Sunday. I checked.
Is it?
It's a Sunday. They're really keen at the commission.
Susan will be there.
I actually think you probably will be, but yeah.
Let's make it the 2nd. and to be fully operational. We were given some particular priorities. So one was to develop a reporting framework with adequate consultation. The other was the design and the build of the information portal, and again with adequate consultation, particularly in this case with the states and territories. And the third was to develop a strategy for delivering information, education and advice to the sector. If I just go back briefly to the portal, because I think it's quite an interesting one, there's a bit of a tension in that you would want to consult as long as possible, but in fact you have to sign off to enable people to get it ready on time. With the portal, it's really the mechanism by which we can deliver the promised one-stop shop and report once, use often, because it will have the functionality to enable core information about a charity to be captured. That is the information that all Commonwealth agencies require and all state and territory agencies require, but you can imagine the conversations that have to happen to get to that point. But they've begun, and to date they're pretty constructive. Similarly, with the one-stop shop, if you really want to deliver a reduction in the regulatory burden, that's the way that the regulator will do it, and there's a lot of other related government initiatives, which I'm happy to talk about, that are also trying to deliver some reduction in administrative and regulatory burden. But if we can get the states and territories to sign up to that, then behind the function that the regulator will have, which is the registration of the charities, you'll have the tax office applying its tax concessions, the Australian tax office. But if the state and territory revenue officers come on board, then they can apply theirs as well. And there are other functions that in time could come on board, so that you could have a single gateway that the charity could enter and all these functions happen behind it. So you can imagine the number of conversations that need to happen. We've begun them with the states and territories. There's a formal mechanism. It's the longest title of a committee. I think it's the Not-for-Profit Working Party of the Standing Committee on Federal Financial Relations. So
that's the Council of Australian
Government. It's true, of the Council of Australian
Government. It's even too long for an acronym.
So that's the formal means, and that's actually, I think, really making headway. Treasury chair that, and typically it's the representatives of Treasury who are sitting on that. But separately, we're calling them bilateral conversations, which is a bit grand, but we're going to the states and territories and meeting with them and inviting them to bring whoever they think is would be helpful from their point of view to have around the table. And we're getting sometimes 20 people around the table. So there's an interest. That doesn't mean it will necessarily translate into a political decision, but we're certainly doing all the groundwork we can to make that happen.
So that's quite useful segue to my next question, which is around what's the role of the AACNC in compliance and enforcement be, and how does that fit with any ongoing role for the tax office? You know, what fits where, perhaps?
And that's where it's a little bit trickier, yeah. There. The role in a literal sense for the regulator is that it will register and possibly deregister. I imagine there will be times it will need to deregister. It will determine charity status. It will keep a public register and keep a searchable database on charities. And the degree to which it undertakes a compliance function will be in relation to making sure that charities remain true to their charitable status and that they, I suppose, still have a valid basis on which ongoing registration is legitimate, and largely that'll be through annual reports of both financial and governance elements. And I think the challenge there is that we're mindful of the commitment to reducing the regulatory and administrative burden, and yet for many entities they're not required now to produce an annual report for the tax office, so there is already an increase. So we're just in discussion, and this was part of the discussion of the roundtables, as to how you can get the basic information that you really need to be able to make that assessment, as well as not impose an unrealistic and unnecessary administrative burden on the charities. But sitting behind that, of course, the tax office has got to make its own... It will make its own determination of the tax concessions that apply, but it will accept the charity... the ACNC's registration of charitable status.
So how we see this working is an organisation wishing to apply will firstly get their ABN number. They'll then apply through the Charity Commission, through the ACNC's website... And it'll be a single form, a single process with regard to that. We'll make the determination on charitable status, and then that will automatically be transferred through to ATO, who will then make the determination with regard to any tax credits there. And the portal's being built in a way that we can automatically then transfer all the data to any other agency that wishes to use it for those purposes, really.
So you could add on ASIC, you
Absolutely.
Could add on ORIC if that's relevant, you
Absolutely.
Could add on the State Incorporated Association's fundraising.
Absolutely, that's the case.
And it's probably worth noting that right now the legislation for the Australian Charities and Not-for-Profits Commission is being drafted. It bits are going almost on a daily basis to the Office of Parliamentary Counsel, and the intention is to have an exposure draft out before Christmas for consultation. That work's happening with Treasury, and the